Next item on the agenda is Gary Stahl, number 10587, Commission Review on Appeal by the applicant for the Norfolk Wetlands Board, February 9, 2011 meeting. Mr. McGinnis, good morning.
Gentlemen, this is a commission review on an appeal by the applicants of the Norfolk Wetland Board's February 9th, 2011 decision to deny the replacement of 148 linear feet of bulkhead and return walls adjacent to the applicant's property, which is situated along a man-made canal off the North Branch of the Lafayette River in the city of Norfolk. Most of these slides are taken directly from the slides presented by city staff to their boards over the course of five various hearings that were held on this project. We did include a couple slides of images or drawings taken directly from their record as well. Location of the project, this is the Lafayette River here, this is the North Branch, and Mr. Stahl's property is located approximately in this area. Kathy, it may be helpful to turn the lights off. Some of these photographs did not show up well earlier with the lights on. This is just an aerial photograph, again, pointing out the general vicinity there. And this is Mr. Stahl's property here, his home, an existing bulkhead that goes around the property. And just some photographs of the on-site conditions as they were viewed by city staff as well as by BMRC staff. You can see the condition of the existing bulkhead. Many of the boards are deteriorated and quite a few gaps in between. Mr. Stahl's original application he submitted himself, and it was to replace the bulkhead in front of this section here, just channelward, and he also wanted to include a timber ramp on the far east side of the property over in this area here. That ramp would have been elevated over top of a small revetment type structure that he initially proposed to the board. There was some concern that city staff had identified wetland vegetation present behind the bulkhead, and the proposal would have included filling those wetlands. And of course, Mr. Stahl had not proposed any type of mitigation. This was the original drawing that was submitted back in April of last year. You can see the bulkhead in this area. The new bulkhead would go in riprap in this general vicinity here, and then a timber ramp. And this is just the cross section. You can see the existing wall depicted here and the new one just in front of it. And then they would have brought the fill above up to the new grade of the new bulkhead. And this was a slide the city staff had used to illustrate to their board the impact areas. The red was where the ramp would go, and just the cross-section of the ramp, and you can see the riprap that would have been underneath that. Let me go back. The Wetland Board discussed the project at that hearing and I guess urged Mr. Stahl that it should be deferred so that he could go back and reconsider some other options, work with city staff. And Mr. Stahl agreed at that time to do so. He came back in August, on August 11, 2010, with the design that eliminated the ramp and the riprap, pulled the bulkhead back landward 4 feet from the existing bulkhead in this area here. It would have kept it within the same approximate alignment along this portion of his property. And so essentially what he was proposing to do was to maintain the wetlands, in this area here. I think the staff had at that time expressed some concern about, the future viability of the existing bulkhead, and if that were to continue to fail, these wetlands themselves would slump out and fail as well. And so, again, the board deferred the action to allow Mr. Stahl to reconsider his other options, and to properly evaluate any mitigation requirements that may be levied by the board. this is a cross-section along the remaining portion of the structure that would have been within place here. So Mr. Stoll then went out and hired Bob Simon of Waterfront Consulting Incorporated to act as his agent. Revised application was submitted in early September and aligned a replacement bulkhead about 3 feet landward of the existing structure. Mr. Simon appeared at the November 10, 2010 Wetland Board hearing, but immediately requested a deferral to the December meeting to allow for expert testimony regarding tidal elevations. The board agreed and did defer that action until December. These are the drawings, though, that were submitted in September, and unfortunately it's a little difficult to see the highlighting that city staff had done here in the slides, but the pink is the existing bulkhead. The new one would have been pulled just landward in this section here, about 3 feet. This is a cross-section showing that, and you can see the existing bulkhead in pink, the new one here in yellow, and it does show these wetlands in this area here. Although this did locate the bulkhead landward of the wetlands, most of the wetlands identified by city staff had estimated there was still approximately 13 square feet of vegetated tidal wetlands landward of this proposed alignment, and had discussed that issue at the December meeting. I'm sorry, this is just another slide showing that new alignment. I'll keep it back there. So on December 8, 2010, the board also heard this case. There was, again, uncertainty stated over the fate of the remaining vegetated wetlands channelward of the new bulkhead. Again, that's this area here. There was no expert testimony provided to the board, as was indicated by the deferral from the previous month. Mr. Simon, who's Mr. Stoll's agent again, testified before the board and questioned the board's use of a 2.69-foot elevation contour, which is an AVD 88, which the board has used over the past several years within the Lafayette River system to establish their upper limit of board jurisdiction. Rather than providing his own evidence through the tide study, Mr. Simon identified five City of Norfolk projects where the city had used an elevation of 2.1 rather than the 2.69 as the upper limit of wetland jurisdiction. I believe city staff did testify to the board that those were city projects that were exempt under the Wetlands Act, four of which never came in front of the board. The fifth one was brought before the board, but was actually a project that created wetlands through an elevation range well beyond the 2.1 or the 2.69 contour, and that really that elevation was not relevant in the review of the project. But city staff did indicate that the 2.1 that the city's consultant had used was improper and should not have been used. But really, the Wetland Board was not in any position to require that to be changed on projects they had no jurisdiction over. Mr. Simon had also indicated to the board during his testimony that he had submitted revised drawings earlier in the day, reflecting a bulkhead realignment back to where the existing bulkhead currently is, because he felt that the 2.1 elevation completely removed any vegetated wetlands within the board's jurisdiction, and therefore the project should not even require a permit from the board. Those drawings, again, were submitted to VMRC just prior to the Wetland Board hearing and were not transmitted to the board in time for them to review. And so the chairman of the board stated that a deferral would again be appropriate to allow the city staff and the board to review those documents. The project was brought back February 9th, 2011 meeting. Again, Mr. Simon argued the use of the 2.1 contour, which he felt that if the city was able to apply that to their own projects, then his client should be able to do the same. City staff had indicated to the board they never received the revised drawings Mr. Simon indicated were submitted on December 8th and had actually requested them in a December 13th, 2010 email to Mr. Simon, and yet those drawings were never submitted to the board prior to the February 9th, 2011 meeting. City staff had recommended that the project, as it was submitted in September, be denied without prejudice, which would allow Mr. Simon and Mr. Stoll to reapply with drawings that were appropriate to what they were requesting, and also to back up their claims the board had no jurisdiction through some type of tide study or whatever it may be that would be required, but that they did not feel that Mr. Simon had made an adequate argument for the case of the use of the 2.1-foot elevation contour. Ultimately, the board agreed with the staff and voted 4-2 to deny the project. Just to hear. The testimony was quite lengthy at the February hearing, and a full verbatim transcript is in the board's, in the commission's record that was transmitted by the Wetland Board. I'll try and summarize this and provide a recommendation to you. Neither Mr. Stoll nor Mr. Simon have stated any grounds for their appeal of the board's decision, even though staff had requested that information in a letter dated February 23rd, 2011. And Mr. Simon, on behalf of Mr. Stoll, did appeal the Wetland Board decision and indicated in the letter that he would send the reason for their appeal to staff. To date, that has not been received. Without their assertions on how the board erred in making the decision to deny, staff is unsure what the commission is being asked to review on appeal. Through his testimony before the board at the December and February hearings, Mr. Simon has asserted that the Norfolk Wetland Board lacks jurisdiction over Mr. Stoll's project. However, Mr. Simon has failed to substantiate his claim with site-specific tide study, similar to what is being done at a nearby property, or I'm sorry, I should say a property within the Lafayette River belonging to Mr. Harrell, who Mr. Simon also represents, and should therefore be well aware of the needs to dispute the city's use of a 2.69-foot elevation contour as the uppermost limit of vegetated tidal wetlands within their jurisdiction. Instead, Mr. Simon chose to argue that the city has used a lower elevation in five of their own applications for various projects throughout the city, and that his client should be afforded the same opportunity. Mr. Simon either failed to recognize or chose to ignore the fact that the city is exempt from obtaining wetland permits pursuant to Section 28.2.1302 of the Code of Virginia, which authorizes governmental activity in wetlands owned or leased by the Commonwealth or a political subdivision thereof. Although the city or their consultants on those five applications had improperly applied the 2.1 elevation as the upper limit of vegetated tidal wetlands, it was of no consequence since the Wetland Board lacked jurisdiction over those projects and was in no position to require the applications be revised. Vegetated tidal wetlands are defined in Chapter 13, Title 20.2 of the Code of Virginia as lands lying between and contiguous to mean low water and an elevation above mean low water equal to 1.5 times the tide range at the site of the proposed project, and upon which is growing any listed plant species as defined in the code. It has not been the practice of any wetland board to require a site-specific tide study to properly establish the landward limit of vegetated tidal wetlands. In some localities, such as Norfolk, a representative elevation has been established within certain water bodies to assess impacts and determine jurisdiction. By doing so, Norfolk has provided a line that can be surveyed on a property to clearly establish an upper limit of vegetated tidal wetlands acceptable to the board without requiring a tide study of an applicant. In cases where an applicant disagrees with that elevation, the applicant has the option of disputing the jurisdictional boundary by commissioning their own site-specific tide study by a licensed land surveyor or engineer. That has not been done in this case. While staff is sympathetic with Mr. Stoll's failure to secure a permit to stabilize his shoreline, We cannot find that the Norfolk Wetland Board erred in making their decision to deny his application. His agent failed to
Please
submit.
Proceed.
His agent failed to submit revised drawings depicting their request to align the replacement bulkhead within the same alignment as the existing bulkhead, and failed to properly support their argument that the board lacked jurisdiction over the project. Furthermore, the applicant and his agent failed to submit any grounds for their appeal of the board's decision. And in light of the foregoing, staff recommends the commission uphold the February 9, 2011 decision of the Norfolk Wetland Board, finding that the board did not fail to fulfill its responsibilities under the wetland zoning ordinance, and that the substantial rights of the applicant have not been prejudiced because of the findings, conclusions, or decision of the board. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. I believe that Mr. Stoll and his agent, Mr. Simon, are here and maybe can shed light on their reason for their appeal, and I believe the city staff, as well as a representative of the city attorney's office, is here to represent the city.
Okay. Any questions? Mr. Schick.
Can you put up the last drawings that were submitted?
The most recent?
The one that got turned down by the Wetlands Board.
What was turned down was the drawings that were submitted in September, which are these here. Mr. Simon claimed that he submitted drawings in December, but those have never been received by the city and have never been received by VMRC.
By VMRC. So those are the last ones.
These are the last drawings here.
Which is 4 foot behind.
3 feet behind.
I mean 3 feet behind the existing bulkhead.
Right.
Okay.
It still results in wetland fill based on the assessment of city staff.
Mr. Plumlee, do you have a question?
Yes, sir. Can you explain a little bit of the process regarding the determination of the city's elevation, how they came to resolve that it is 2.69, publish that information? I'm not familiar with the Norfolk ordinance specifically.
Well, the and city staff's here and probably can expand on that a little bit, but basically the city had used a study that was done by ODU back in the 80s that provided that information, and the board had previously used, I believe, an elevation in the Lafayette River of 2.74 feet in AVD 88. There was a tide study done on a project a number of years ago where there was a dispute of that elevation. An engineer in the city of Norfolk did a tide study on Edgewater Haven, which is a tributary to the Lafayette River, and came up with a 2.69 foot elevation contour, which the board then adopted because it actually did lower the elevation, which was to the benefit, really, of the property owners, even though it was only a small amount, 0.05 of a foot, but nevertheless, it did lower that. The city at this point has not commissioned or done their own tide studies, but I believe that this question has been raised on Mr. Stoll's application as well as another one before the board that it was in the record, and I believe the city is looking to review information that's being submitted on a separate project, the tide study, and may conduct their own if they feel that that will be necessary. So,
is that a so it is an elevation that is non-discretionary? It's set throughout Norfolk?
No, it's set in Lafayette River.
In that watershed?
They do have a different elevations. They will use in other watersheds. But for the Lafayette River, I believe the 2.69 is what they have been using for the past 4 or 5 years.
But the initial jurisdictional determination is done by staff, with project by project, with regards to whether or not that requires application.
The survey crew from the Department of Public Works to actually come in and survey in that elevation contour. So it's not something that they put on the applicant to go and establish where that contour lies, that they will pull in, and that was done on this case.
Thank you.
Further questions? Mr. Tankard?
I'm afraid you're going to have to help me again with the elevation contour. What exactly is that? Is that...
let me go back to this drawing here. It's a line across the property where that 2.69 elevation can be, a spot found across and essentially connect the dots and create a line. And that line on the property would represent the upper limit, how far up into the property jurisdictional wetlands extend.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Schick?
And this stems from an issue about, in general, in other areas, usually somebody would go out and identify what type of plants are growing into an area and identify where the wetlands start and stop based on that.
I should clarify that the 2.69 is the uppermost limit, but you still have to have the presence of wetland vegetation, one of the listed species, up to that line, up to that contour line, in order for that to be jurisdictional. And in many cases, it's not, the vegetation is not present up to that contour. And so what city staff will do is they'll actually pull those flags or survey flags and move channelward until they actually hit one of the listed species so that they will actually bring that down to actually lessen the square footage of impact to only cover those areas that are actually vegetated.
Somewhat a benefit of the doubt.
Right. So,
Mr. Schick?
So the contour line is basically a starting point,
and then
it's a site-by-site evaluation of actual wetlands available.
And you could find on one piece of property you may have vegetation on one side all the way up to the 2.69 contour, and then you may find as you move across the property that it may be far lower in elevation where you find the vegetation present. And so they will alter that line, that jurisdictional line, to conform with the vegetation.
Okay. Further questions? Just real quick, Ben, for the record, how many meetings was this project?
5 hearings. Last May, August, November, December, and this past February.
Okay. Further questions? Thank you. Is the applicant present or represented? While the applicant's coming up, I think it's always good to review the law that we're dealing with. 28.2.13.13, when commissioned to modify, remand, or reverse decision of the Wetlands Board, the commission shall modify, remand, or reverse the decision of the Wetlands Board if, one, the Wetlands Board, in reaching its decision, failed to fulfill its responsibilities under the Wetlands Zoning Ordinance, or two, the substantial rights of the appellant or the applicant have been prejudiced because the findings, conclusions, or decisions of the Board are in violation of constitutional provisions, in excess of statutory authority or jurisdiction of the Wetlands Board, made upon unlawful procedure, affected by other error of law, unsupported by the evidence on the record considered as a whole, or arbitrary, capricious, or an abuse of discretion. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Chairman Bowman. Robert Simon, Waterfront Consultants.
His right hand. Do you solemnly swear the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes, sir.
Proceed, please.
Ben did a wonderful job on it, but I think he left out a few relevant points that I'd like to bring to the board's or the commission's attention here. Yes, this project has gone to 5 hearings. It's directly tied to another project that was referenced, Robert Harrell, which is a violation case being prosecuted by the city of Norfolk, one of our clients as well, who has actually commissioned a tide study be done at his site. What we have been challenging since the December hearing with the Norfolk board is their use of 2.69 as their upper limit of jurisdiction. We have asked them in writing in both cases to specifically provide documentation for where they got that number. If they, as a regulating board, are going to regulate the citizens of Norfolk and impose penalties or upper limits of jurisdictions or use of properties up to certain elevations, then we feel it's incumbent upon them to prove the origin of that number and the validity of it. We asked that in December. We challenged them. We have had no response. At the February meeting, we finally did get a response that, yes, we are using the Giorgio study. The infamous 2.69 number came from a study commissioned by a homeowner in Edgewater Cove to challenge the Norfolk 2.74 number that they'd been using. It was a site-specific study in an impounded cove that the author said, and we entered it into the record, do not apply this number elsewhere in the river. Do not use it.
Do you have that on record somewhere?
Yes, sir. It was submitted to them, and I have copies of the board would like that out as well.
Is that not in the record?
It's not part of the record transmitted by the Wetland Board.
It's not? No. I can't accept it then.
You know, it's amazing how it came out of the record. The author states, do not use it. We'll go beyond that. Your own survey staff has put out issue or directions on how to determine upper limits of tide of tidal jurisdiction. You cannot take a value at one site and uniformly apply it throughout the river. Does not work that way. In November, we met with the city staff to go over how we were interpolating between the Norfolk Sewell's Point benchmark and the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard benchmark to review our findings that the Norfolk jurisdictional limit was really around 2.3 if you follow the NOAA guidelines and the Corps of Engineers guidelines. While your own surveyor said you're doing it correctly, but you know what? A tide study may back up your information. This was on the Harrell case at the mouth of the Lafayette River. We commissioned a tide study at the Harrell site. We did not commission a tide study specifically at Mr. Stuhl's site. Yes, we relied on five applications submitted by the city of Norfolk. One of them's right at the mouth of the creek that feeds Mr. Stuhl. The city used 2.1 in their applications, not once, five times since 2002. Those were the latest applications submitted, signed by the assistant city attorney, or city manager, excuse me, and the city engineer. Now, whether or not they have to apply to their local wetlands board, I think is irrelevant. They had to go to the Corps of Engineers, they had to come to the BMRC, and they have a fiduciary responsibility as stated in the certification of the applicant that the information's accurate. If it's not accurate, why submit it? I think they have the same responsibility as any applicant or citizen of Norfolk to supply correct information. They didn't do it once. They do it in every application they submit. Now, I think it is important that they be held to the same standard. We asked that and we argued that. When we came back to the board, we said, we have it from the author, do not use 2.69. We believe the limit is lower. We ask you to prove your jurisdiction. We believe this bulkhead is totally out of your jurisdiction because, one, first of all, we believe there is no contiguity between the upland and the wetland, or mean low water, excuse me. That's one. It has to be contiguous to mean low water. The vertical structure breaks that contiguity. The lowest crack in that bulkhead we found was at elevation 2.3, which is what we believe is the upper limit of the wetland jurisdiction to begin with. The second thing is that there are two VIMS reports written for these projects, one when Mr. Stuhl originally submitted it, and it stated, and I quote right out of the original one, the shoreline currently contains the existing bulkhead. The upland is primarily in lawn being mowed routinely to the bulkhead edge. No wetlands impact stated in the VIMS report. The resubmitted application by my company. The shoreline currently contains the existing bulkhead. The upland is primarily lawn that is routinely mowed to the bulkhead. Tidal marsh exists in the vicinity on adjacent shoreline and across the waterway. Again, no wetland impacts. VIMS is the technical advisor to this board. I believe that their assessment is there were no impacts. I believe I can go through the transcript, if you'd like, for the amount of direct challenges we made to that board to show the validity of the number they are applying incorrectly by the own standards of NOAA and the Army Corps of Engineers. You cannot take one number and apply it across the city. I don't care how convenient that happens to be or they think it is to the citizenry. And the board's position that you either accept our number or you have to go do a tide study to prove us wrong. I think it's incumbent upon a regulatory agency to say, this is a scientific valid number. If you think it's wrong, you prove it's wrong. They're the regulators. And when you have the author of the number that they're using saying don't use it, I think the city has been arbitrary and capricious in applying this number throughout the river basin. The Edgewater Cove tidal study was done in an impounded cove affected by a sandbar across the mouth of it, not to be taken out of that cove and used elsewhere. Yet that's exactly what has been done. I would ask the commission to either remand it back to the board or overturn it and tell the city, provide your own tidal study. If you're going to regulate the citizens of Norfolk, and you're going to put them in violation or tell them you can't use your yard below this elevation, then it must be incumbent upon them to have the proof to do that.
Questions of the gentleman? I have one. Going back to the document that was in question as to whether we receive or not pertaining to the tide study, why was that not entered into the record?
It was put into the record in the Harrell case.
Okay.
The Harrell case has been referred to numerous times in these two cases. They're tied together. And I don't know why it is not in the record coming over on this case, but it has been put into the record.
Okay, because in reviewing it and after counsel's prompting, I'll ask for an interpretation from counsel. Under 28.2.13.12b, the commission may take such additional evidence as may be necessary to resolve any controversy as to the correctness of the record. I think I'll reserve judgment on whether or not we allow that document after I hear from the city.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. Any other questions of the gentleman?
I have a couple.
Mr. Plumlee.
Mr. Simon, you stated that VIMS did not identify impacted vegetation. Did you, and I've looked through the transcript quickly, but did you provide information regarding indications of wetlands on the site?
No, sir. They did it from, however they review it, I know one was from an actual site visit. The first one, I don't know if it was a site visit or a desktop review. But here are the two VIMS reports for this application.
How close were the city's projects to this this site? Did you?
One was less than a mile.
In the same watershed?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Schick, do you have a
Yeah.
Mr. Schick?
Was there an on-site study done by the Norfolk Wetlands Board and their staff?
It's in the testimony or the transcript, sir. The city of Norfolk has never conducted, I take that back, they did conduct the ODU study, which we have actually found flaws in the ODU study, the way the datums were manipulated. The city then adopted the Giorgio study and applied it throughout the city. But as for has the city done an individual tide study in the Lafayette? No.
And how about as far as a wetlands evaluation for species of wetlands on this particular piece of property?
Kevin says he has found species on the property. With all due respect, sir, doesn't matter where those species are growing. The law states you get 1.5 times the tide range from mean low water. They can be growing at my back door, but if I'm above that limit, they're not tidal or jurisdictional wetlands.
Further questions? Mr. Tankard.
I have a couple questions. One, I wanted to just make sure that I'm reading correctly. This is a man-made canal. Is that correct?
We believe that is the history of it, yes, sir.
And my other question is, you propose that this application be, the bulkhead be aligned 3 foot landward of its current position. Is that correct, and why so?
That is what we had applied before we had done the interpolation and the issues that were coming up in the Harrell case, and we determined that the limit was actually lower, the jurisdictional limit. And we went back to the board and said, look, you don't have any jurisdiction behind our bulkhead. We challenged that. We asked you to prove where you have jurisdiction. We would like to replace our bulkhead in line. The board considered that, but Kevin informed the board that there were wetlands behind that bulkhead and we could not do it without coming back to the board. Even if we wanted to replace it in line, we had to go to the board. Our position was we challenged that jurisdiction and said we don't need to come to this board based on what we are coming up with the jurisdiction, based on what the NOAA guidelines say in interpreting or interpolating what the jurisdictional limit is.
Further questions?
One other question.
Yes, sir, yeah. Mr. Schick.
That does beg the question. What do you actually want to apply for? Not this particular configuration. You want to replace it in the same place?
In the same footprint. And we're asking for a ruling on whether or not this is jurisdictional or not. We have challenged the board's jurisdictional limit of 2.69 at two public hearings and have gotten nothing from the city to validate or support that other than that they adopted the Giorgio study and used it throughout. That is not proper procedure.
Thank you. Mr. Plumlee.
This might be a question for our counsel, but I'll pose it to Mr. Simon first. The presentation in the presentation, it was stated that there weren't grounds set forth specifically for the appeal. It appears that that was the there was a long discussion in the transcript over elevation, at least in the February hearing. I don't know if that is a bar to this particular review, if it was not stated plainly in the appeal process. I hadn't gone back and looked at that procedure, I didn't know if you wanted to address that. You mentioned arbitrary and capricious as one of the grounds for appealing the board's decision. I didn't know if there were others, and I take it to mean that that's based on the abuse of discretion and application of the elevation that they have determined. In the prior question you were asked, it seems though you're simply saying you want a ruling that that the Wetlands Board does not have jurisdiction. Period. You're not having an application before this commission for approval.
No, sir.
Okay. And I don't know, David, if that's something that we need to go over to understand with regards to stating grounds, if that missed that. And I was going to also say to our commissioner, I would suggest that we accept the amendment to the record. That would be my position to, if I don't know if I get a say in it. I think might look at the statute that there not be a question unresolved with regards to the record
pertaining to that document,
pertaining to that question. One single document. I mean, that would be my recommendation.
What I was hoping, as far as the case matures, I was hoping the city, not to tell them how to provide their case, but I wanted to hear basically what they have to say pertaining, because clearly at this point, from the chair's perspective, there's been an assertion of an arbitrary application that I think may satisfy some of the parameters of the statute. But I'm looking forward to the city rebutting that, but we'll see how that goes.
Council comments to respond to Mr. Plumlee. This is an appeal. This board sitting in its appellate capacity is not a de novo review. At the same time, I don't think there are any formal pleading requirements for an appellant to bring a matter before the board. You probably ought to look at the record to see if a legal matter identified in 28.2.13.13 was preserved below. And to answer your last question about the amendment of the record, I think it's in this commission's discretion to accept additional evidence that was not presented to the local Wetlands Board.
Does that require a motion and a vote? Or can the chair authorize it? I know we've had to open the record before by motion and vote, but
The statute grants the commission in its discretion the authority to receive additional evidence.
Questions before the commission. Does the commission wish to see the document that may clarify? Is there a motion?
Motion
made by Mr. Plumlee, second by Mr. Tank. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Present the document, please, sir. You seen this, man? Let the city look at it as well if they haven't seen it. But I think if it's in the Herald record, they probably have. Further questions of Mr. Simon?
Just one more time, identify the author and the
recipient. Yes,
Jim Giorgio.
And who is that?
He is the author of the Edgewater study. that the city is basing their 2.69 elevation on the entire Lafayette River.
Further.
And the recipient?
The recipient of that document was Mr. Eason, who is a co-representative of Mr. Harold, co-agent.
A member of the state bar?
Yes, sir.
Further questions, Mr. Tankard?
Qualifications of Mr. Giorgio, SG Development Consultants. I'm not familiar.
He's a local PE with the city of Norfolk. Has done many dredge applications for the city of Norfolk. He is now currently employed by the U.S. Navy as a head hydrographer, I believe is the word he terms. He is in charge of the dredging projects for the Navy.
Further questions? Thank you, sir. Does your client wish to make a statement?
I don't believe so at this point.
All right. Thank you, sir. City President or Representative? Good morning, sir.
Good morning, members of the Commission. My name is Adam Melita, Deputy City Attorney, City of Norfolk.
Pleasure to have you here, sir.
Thank you. On behalf of the city and the board, I understand that we are here today to review the correctness, essentially, of the board's decision, and I would agree with council, and I'll paraphrase the city's position that it is improper to reverse the Norfolk Wetlands Board decision on a basis other than the basis that were presented to it during the course of the five hearings of this item. So if there is some other argument that was not put before the board, it is not appropriate to consider reversing its decision and finding that it committed either a legal error or some sort of arbitrary, capricious mistake on the grounds of something that was not before it for consideration. And so we are here to discuss the adequacy of the Mr. Stahl's argument on the record and as presented today. And there are three points I want to make in exposition of the city's position. First of all, I understand the gravamen of Mr. Simon's argument to be that the appeal should be granted because the upper jurisdiction the upper elevation of wetlands jurisdiction applied by the board is not the 2.69 that was utilized during the hearing of this item. There's no evidence of what the elevation is at this site other than the 2.69. Mr. Simon has postulated that it might be 2.1. This was the argument he made during the hearing of this item, saying that there were applications by the City of Norfolk Department of Public Works that used a 2.1 elevation, but the evidence at the hearing, and that's contained at page 5AI-21 of the transcript of the record 5A-21, it's an excerpt from the transcript, and it indicates there that four of those five applications were for governmental activities that were exempt from board review and never came before the board. So the argument that the board applied a 2.1 elevation on four items that it never saw is not compelling. The argument that the board applied a 2.1 elevation on the fifth item is also not compelling based on the same evidence from page 5AI-21 of the record, where the board was presented with evidence from Mr. Du Bois, where he explained that on this project, it's known as the Haven Creek Project. Again, in review of that project, we indicated both to city staff and to the city's consultant that in our estimation, the true upper limits of wetlands was actually higher than that, that being the 2.1. But it wasn't germane because the city was planting wetlands throughout the range from mean low water all the way up to elevation 4. So whether the jurisdictional limit was 2.1 or 2.69, it had no relevance to the project because they were planting wetlands all the way up to elevation 4. So there's nothing in the record to indicate that on that Haven Creek project, the one city project that did come before the board, that any jurisdictional upper bound of 2.1 was ever applied. And so we don't believe there's anything in the record to support the 2.1 number that's being proposed in the application by Mr. Stull. I also heard this morning that Mr. Simon believes the real elevation on this property might be 2.3, and that's because that was the lowest elevation for any crack in that deteriorated bulkhead through which any sort of infiltration of water could have gotten into the upland portion of the site, or the wetlands portion of the site. But again, there's nothing in the record to indicate that that 2.3 elevation is actually the correct jurisdictional upper limit, and so we don't believe that there's any support for a 2.3 number either. Essentially, what Mr. Stull's position boils down to is that the 2.69 is wrong, therefore this application should not have been denied. There are two problems that I want to note with that. City staff may have additional factual information, but I'm going to make two legal points about the inadequacy of that position. First of all, the 2.69 that was derived from the Giorgio study, also done in the Lafayette River area of the city, was not applied throughout the city, as was testified to by Mr. Simon. It was only ever applied by the city throughout the Lafayette watershed area. Secondly, the 2.9 number that was used by the city and has been used for several years was actually a revision downward from a 2.74 elevation that had been used under the original ODU study. So essentially, the city had two pieces of data to use for this piece of property. They had the ODU study showing the 2.74, and then they had the 2.69 from Mr. Giorgio. They elected to choose a 2.69 in the Lafayette area and revise down the 2.74. So other than facts showing 2.74 and 2.69, we don't have anything to indicate what the elevation is at this property. And to the extent 2.69 is wrong, then Mr. Simon is arguing that the 2.74 used by the city prior to that time under the ODU study would be the correct elevation. The city's position is that it would be contrary to public policy, contrary to efficiency, and contrary to the practices throughout the Commonwealth to require, in this instance, that the city perform a title study at every location upon which an applicant makes a wetlands permit application. And so we reject the position proposed by Mr. Stull that the city shall be required to perform a tide study at every location. I will leave with this observation. Insofar as Mr. Simon responded to Commissioner Plumlee's question about what it is that he's asking for, today he advises the commission that he's asking for permission, or he would like to reconstruct the bulkhead that is existing, the one that is failing now. The application that was denied was an application to construct the bulkhead, I think, 3 feet landward of where it is now. So to the extent the board has denied him permission to do something he does not want to do, and that denial was without prejudice to his ability to apply for what he does want to do, there's really no harm done by the board's denial without prejudice of an application that he no longer seeks to pursue. I'll defer further comments, and there may be some factual information that staff would like to provide if there are no questions for me.
I just have one. I'm a little troubled, having a hard time understanding why the city would apply the 2.69 figure in the watershed when clearly the author has indicated don't use it anywhere but Edgewater Cove. Can you help me with that a little bit?
I will have staff speak to the specifics of that sort of from a global perspective. First of all, I do think that the city does no harm in to property owners by revising down the elevation. If they believe that the evidence was more accurate in this vicinity of the city than the older ODU study, then I think it's within the discretion to accept or use that number despite whether or not the original owner thought that was a good idea. I don't think it's the province of the property owner to constrain whether or not the information provided to the city on an application is either more accurate or more specific to a specific watershed area. But I will allow staff who was specifically involved with that project to try to provide you some more factual information to answer your question better than I have.
Okay. Further questions, Mr. Plumlee?
Did the city staff, and this may be a question for staff as opposed to council, but was there a presentation? I haven't put my finger on it going through the transcript here, where staff identified vegetated wetlands on the site. I know that it was mowed, but often you can still identify plants that have been mowed on the site, and I was wondering if that had been done.
I believe it was done. The customary process, and there may be slides that show it, I'm not sure of the resolution, but typically after the upper jurisdictional elevation line is essentially laid out or staked out on the property, then staff goes through and actually achieves a final delineation by flagging individual species that are within the jurisdictional definition of the code. And then to the extent the flags on those species are upland of the jurisdictional line, they're meaningless because the jurisdictional line is the upper bound. And to the extent those flags are seaward of the surveyed jurisdictional elevation line, then the final delineation is revised down to match up with the flag property. So that's typically how it's done. I believe it was done on this site, but again, I'm going to ask Mr. Du Bois to confirm that for you.
And further questions?
Just one other. And with regard to the burden that you would place on the, according to your argument, if I understand it correctly, you would place on the homeowner the burden of demonstrating a lower elevation selection than what the city staff has determined through its use of scientific studies for the vicinity of the project.
That's correct. We have two scientific data that we know of. We have the ODE study, and then we have the Giorgio study, and then there's been nothing since. Specifically, there was nothing done at this property to indicate that that the 2.69 was not correct. Because the authority of this commission to reverse the Norfolk Wetlands Board is constrained to various mistakes that the board might make, including making decisions that are unsupported by the evidence, we believe that there is evidence in the record to support the 2.69 and that there is not evidence in the record to support anything other than that number.
So your position is you've met the burden, the city has met the burden of establishing the elevation, and that they must come back to counter that. Is that ultimately what you're saying?
That's correct.
All right. Further questions?
Yes.
Mr. Schick.
Can you respond to the statement before that as far as the jurisdictional levels can't – I'm trying to remember exactly what was said about – was it 1.5 times the elevation? Can you respond to that?
Well, I mean, what we're talking about essentially in trying to define the jurisdiction of the Wetlands Board, specifically with where that jurisdiction applies to Mr. Stahl's property, is satisfaction of both elements that the statute requires. A, that the elevation established by 1.5 times the elevation above mean low water and the presence of the defined wetland species. So you have to have both of those to be within the jurisdiction. But it is. It's 1.5 times the elevation above mean low water.
At
the site.
So in your opinion, the staff has satisfied both of those elements?
It has. By using the data, the original ODU data, and then revised based on whatever was included with Mr. Giorgio's study, that indicated that as near as they could tell at this site, the elevation number would be the 2.69. And then, as I indicated in my prior response, to the extent the homeowner had information that the elevation was lower than that, wouldn't matter if it were higher. But to the extent the homeowner had information that the elevation was actually lower than that, then the confluence of that new elevation with the presence of the wetland species would establish at this site the specific jurisdiction of the board.
Okay. Other questions? Thank you. City wish to be heard?
Kevin DuBois, staff to the Wetlands Board. I'm just...
So I'm swear a testament that you're about to give be the truth, the whole truth, and none but the truth, except you God. Anything you'd like to say?
I'm just here to answer questions.
Any questions of Mr. DuBois from the city? Mr. Tankard? I mean, from the commission. Mr. Tankard?
One of the triggers to make this, make it so that you all maintain that the homeowner has to pull back is that the presence of wetlands, plants, et cetera. In the VIMS report, I'm not seeing any indication of that. How did the board come up with this decision that they existed while VIMS did not?
I can answer that. First, I think Please. It's probably germane for the commission to give you my professional credentials. I have a master's degree in marine environmental research. I also am certified by the Society of Wetland Scientists as a professional wetland scientist. I'm also certified by the state of Virginia as a wetland delineator. I'm also vice president of the Virginia Association of Wetland Professionals. To answer your question.
And has testified before this commission many times as well. Just
yes,
to complete
I have.
It.
Yes, sir.
Proceed.
To meet those two criteria, we actually had the Norfolk survey crew go out and establish the 2.69 elevation on the site. And yes, I did perform a wetland delineation. I located wetlands vegetation within that range. And the flags that we put on the site that you may have seen in some of the previous slides and the information that was provided to the board and testimony to the board reflected the fact that both the elevation and the vegetation met the criteria in the law.
Further questions? Mr. Tankard.
So if you would, what vegetation did you see? Do you remember? What species of plants, et cetera?
I believe there was Rumex and there were other species. I don't remember exactly which
photograph.
But I take that list with me.
He's done it.
Further questions? Mr. Plumlee?
The VIMS report is a scientific study that's generally introduced during the process of the Wetlands Board hearing, and I assume it was in this case. Did you find any flawed reasoning in the VIMS report regarding wetlands delineation?
I don't remember specifically addressing that. It's customary in the Norfolk Wetlands Board hearings that staff, because of our credentials, provide independent testimony, and the board doesn't necessarily rely 100% on the VIMS reports. In recent years, VIMS has not conducted site-specific evaluations, and so I think the board weighs that in the deliberation of, you know, what evidence to weigh.
But in this specific instance, they did make a site visit. They did review, if that's correct. And I take it that it was presented during the hearings, the VIMS report. Is that accurate?
We provide them to the board, yes.
Okay, and it was read aloud in the record during the proceeding or not?
I can't say for a fact whether or not it was read aloud, but it's provided in the board's packets, and they have the opportunity to read it.
So if I understand correctly, you did not find any specific error in the VIMS report? I mean, I know at times they don't make site visits, but in this instance they did obviously make a site visit. They issued a report. Now, I take that. I may be wrong about that, so I need you to correct me if I am wrong about that.
I don't call specifically, and I'm not sure if VIMS did their assessment before or after we actually did the survey and delineation information. They may not have. If I could see the photograph, I could probably tell you because...
Is that a photograph that's part of the slide?
Well, I think the VIMS technical assessment was cited by Mr. Simon, but these are the flags that staff placed. And if VIMS did their assessment prior to us actually doing the delineation and surveying the site, then they may have overlooked the wetlands vegetation and not known where the upper limits was based on elevation.
But you did not. You don't know one way or the other whether they when they conducted that.
I don't
review. Okay.
Further questions, Mr. Tankard?
Just to follow up now, so I'm clear. So the pink flags we see in this photo, they are the existence of wetland species that, on site.
That's correct.
But follow up question. Where are those? I can't see anything. The plagues, I think, are, what, about an inch square in diameter, so they're fairly small. There's nothing larger than their existence there.
Again, the site is being mowed, so it is difficult to identify the vegetation when it's in a mowed state.
Okay.
Further questions? Thank you, sir. Mr. Simon, finish.
Thank you.
You have 3 minutes to rebut, please.
Yes, sir. I'll try to make this very brief.
Yes, sir.
Address several things that were said. First of all, an issue of the applications I alluded to. If the board would like these or the commission, they're right here. They used the number. My point with the board was not that board had to review them, but the Corps of Engineers and this commission has to review them. So if you're going to submit an application, it should be correct. That was the point I was trying to make. Whether the board needs to see them or not, those are the five applications that they use 2.1 as the upper limit of jurisdiction. The next issue is the 2.3 number that we put out, it wasn't based on the cracks in the bulkhead. It was based on the formula put out by NOAA that when you have two tidal benchmarks, you can interpolate between them to get an idea of the tide range and the upper limits at your site. We use that method. We validated it with your own surveyors, Mr. Ben Stagg and Mr. Hank Badger. They are present. We had a meeting at Mr. Carl Eason's office on November 19th to validate the methodology we used and employed. It's not just the cracks in the bulkhead. The 2.69 number that they generously downgraded from the 2.74 number, if you start out with an invalid number, it doesn't really make a difference if you downgrade to another invalid number. The ODU study we put directly into the record had misapplied and took a tidal datum and made it a fixed datum. That study was debunked. We put that into the record. So to take the 269 and feel like we're being generous is not valid either. The project that my client wishes to do or wishes this board to rule on, this commission to rule on, based on the law, the definition, 28.2-1300, to be jurisdictional, it's 1.5 times the tide range from mean low water. I don't care how many pink flags he puts up in that yard. It is a set elevation at a specific site. The VIM study, Kevin couldn't determine whether or not they did it or not on site. Here's the photograph from the VIM study. Kevin had already flagged it. They didn't recognize any wetlands or state any wetlands out there. Our contention is that we use 2.3 as an interpolated method. That is an approved method by NOAA, by the Army Corps of Engineers. We employed that. The city employed 2.69 over the objection of the author and in direct violation of the standards or methods to interpret the mean low water and upper limits of jurisdiction at a specific site. They are not correct in their methodology. Therefore, we say it's 2.3 here. Actually, we contested it was 2.1 based on the fact that the city submits applications using 2.1. Why shouldn't the citizens be able to use that? That was our contention with the board, why they said we didn't offer anything valid. We offered them five applications where they did that. One was at the Norfolk Zoo. One was at Haven Creek for the restoration project and for their boat ramp project. They also used 2.1 down in the city downtown. They use 2.1. They don't think it's incumbent upon them to prove correct numbers, but yet our homeowners have to. And just for the record, the title study that Mr. Harrell commissioned has cost in excess of $10,000 to date. I don't think it's incumbent upon every homeowner to sit there and have to do a title study. The city should actually do a title study, an accurate one, and come up with it. And for this commission's benefit, the tide study that was commissioned by Mr. Harrell is in the city possession. They have that. The upper limit of jurisdiction out of that tide study is 2.35. That's the limit.
Further questions?
I do.
Mr. Plumlee.
Thank you. Mr. Simon, you appeared before, while I was on the city's wetlands board, Virginia Beach, for 6.5 years. You appeared regularly before the board, and I would suppose you are an expert in identification of vegetated wetlands. I'm curious to know what you found at the site.
What I found at this site was a bulkhead that needed to be replaced. What I found was a bulkhead that had some cracks in it at the top.
I think the question, sir, related to vegetation.
Vegetation. I did not identify to the extent that Kevin identified every different species of plant up there. Because, quite frankly, sir, I didn't look for it. When I got involved with this project, Mr. Stuhl had already been deferred by the board twice, and we went out there and started shooting elevations on the site. The code is very specific. You get to go to the upper limit of jurisdiction in the presence of vegetation. You don't get to say, we have vegetation, and we're going to take it back to wherever it ends. The code also says that vegetation has to be contiguous to mean low water. Mean low water doesn't even get up in this creek. We have a vertical structure that breaks that contiguity. They're not even contiguous to mean low water. They don't even meet the definition of wetlands. That is why I believe VIMS did not in their report state any wetlands are even impacted. We keep looking over that first thing in the code. Are they contiguous to mean low water? I don't think they're contiguous if you've got a vertical structure separating them.
That structure is not in very good condition.
It's still in a condition that the Corps of Engineers has already approved the project. The Corps of Engineers used to say the standard was that the structure had to be 50% or more serviceable. That is more than 50% serviceable. It is still vertical. Yes, does it have some cracks by the surface of it? Yes, it does. We have admitted to that. But those cracks, the lowest elevation we found on those was a 2.3 in one corner.
Further questions? Thank you, Mr. Simon.
Thank you.
Matters before the commission for discussion and action. Mr. Tankard.
I think I have to boil it down a little bit into its most simplistic form. And I think the contiguous nature to tidal wetlands, the low watermark, given the vertical nature of a bulkhead, seems to me a problematic issue here. I think also that the 2.69 number used is a problematic number. So when I look at what we have here, a man-made canal, a bulkhead that they simply want to replace as it exists today, I have a real problem understanding why this was denied. I'll start my conversation or thoughts in that regard.
Further comments?
Well,
Mr. Plumlee?
I tend to agree. Thank you, Commissioner. I tend to agree that when you're applying this type of burden on a homeowner to disprove elevation, it becomes a real problem, particularly when the initial request was to replace. There's obviously been some confusion with the number of times this matter went up before the Wetlands Board and the project changed over time. But the real question coming before us is, did the city have jurisdiction at this location? And I'm not satisfied. I understand the qualifications of Mr. Du Bois, but I'm not satisfied that they've demonstrated that in this matter, and particularly when you have a report from VIMS indicating that there were no wetlands present. So that would be my position.
Further comment? Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Mr. Plumlee is right in that the key issue is jurisdiction, and we're being asked at this point in this appeal to reverse the decision of the Wetlands Board based on the fact that they did not have jurisdiction. And so I think the city's practice is in question of using an extrapolated elevation as a default for interpreting jurisdiction. And, you know, frankly, I think I think it comes down to whether or not the decision was based on the best available data and whether or not there was a sound record basis for the decision. And as I see it, we now have a letter from the author of the study that was used that suggests that there are limitations to the data that were associated with the study in Edgewater. Having said that, as a matter of practicability, there are often limitations to data that agencies have to use, and making decisions. It happens regularly, and whether it's in wetlands decisions or fisheries or the things that we normally do as a commission. So, again, as a matter of practicability, I think the city's practice of using a standard is being questioned, but we're being asked to overturn that practice and a decision that was based on that practice in the absence of a formal evaluation that's site-specific that offers evidence to the contrary. And so, you know, as I read through the staff evaluation, they do point out that there is a process whereby the city uses this, and if a homeowner wants to challenge that decision, they have the ability to do it, but they would need to have a formal analysis done to overcome that. And I think as a practical matter, the city's practice is not inappropriate. I think the decision that was made by the Wetlands Board does have a record basis. It has a connection to the facts that were presented in the case. Admittedly, there are limitations to the data that were used, and so maybe it's not 2.69 at this site. But I think there has to be a formal evaluation of that done in order to overcome that decision that was made. So I'm inclined to agree with staff and support the decision of the Wetlands Board.
Further comment? Mr. Schick?
I think Mr. Tanker kind of hit it on the head. And is this contiguous to low mean water? And our staff hasn't commented on that, and VIM staff hasn't commented on that concept as far as, and that is the beginning of this jurisdiction question. And I guess I kind of need to know the answer on that. And
Council?
Where is jurisdiction, and is this, does a bulkhead count as a break in the contiguous connection to low mean water?
Mr. Grannis, can you answer that? Not to put you on the spot or anything.
But we are.
I don't think I can answer that question right now. All right. Not looking at it.
Further questions or comments? Mr. Plumlee?
Just in response, I was less persuaded by the argument that it wasn't contiguous because that's going to take out of the jurisdiction of the Wetlands Board quite a number of projects. I think I was more persuaded by the fact that VIMS did not identify a wetland species at this site. And while Mr. DuBois did indicate that he had found a species, there was evidence in the record otherwise. And giving the homeowner the benefit of that analysis, that's more persuasive to me than the contiguous argument. And I see this as a very site-specific evaluation and not one of practice by the City of Norfolk.
Further comments? I guess, Tony?
I think I need to make one statement with regard to the VIMS report. And I think this.
You have been sworn, for the record.
This sort of goes to the fact of some of the evolution of the VIMS assessments and what they provide in their report. Historically, they would have provided a sort of an impact table that would break down the types of wetlands at a site and the amount of square feet of wetland impacts of a different type. In these reports, they didn't do that. And so I think it's a little bit unclear as to whether or not they really identified wetlands that were right behind the bulkhead or not. Or whether or not they were just looking at the fact that there was a lawn in the area and that the area was mowed to the back of the bulkhead. So I think that needs to be considered, that VIMS in this case has gotten away, or in many cases the reports have gotten away from that specific wetland assessment impact. And so you don't see that kind of detail in these reports that you might have seen in reports sometime in the past. So I think that should be just considered by the commission. Also, I would address the contiguous issue from a practical standpoint. One thing we tend to do at the staff level is look at the functionality of a bulkhead and whether or not it precludes the tide from inundating an area behind it. And so I think you have to look at whether or not this bulkhead is in such poor condition or whether the gaps and holes in the bulkhead are so large that they allow for inundation within an elevation that's defined by the Wetland Act. And without knowing all the details of the record and what testimony there was, I don't know that there was a whole lot of debate about the contiguous aspect of where the holes were in the bulkhead relative to the tidal elevation. Of course, Mr. Simon testified today that he didn't find any holes below 2.3, I think, was what he said. But in addition to that, though, we've had the arguments about the elevation of wetlands, as the city has identified, are a little bit higher. So you have to kind of assume, I guess, based on that testimony, that there are holes in the bulkhead that are higher than 2.3, and so that would make the area contiguous. So just want to add those comments for clarification. And if you have any questions, I or
questions.
Ben from the staff can try and answer anything else.
Does Vims have any further comment on?
If you have questions.
I think Mr. Simon wanted to address something.
One more. I'm not running a fire department meeting right about now, and all due respect.
All due respect, and I understand what Tony said there on based on the functionality of the bulkhead. Bear in mind, mean high water at this site is 0.91. 2.3 is almost 2.5 feet above it. So is it functioning? Are these supposed wetlands being nourished? No.
Thank you. It's much lower.
Councilor? Equal time. I want to reemphasize where I started my presentation, which is to reverse the Norfolk Wetlands Board on the basis of something that was never presented to it during its hearing would be improper. The question of contiguity was never presented to the board, and so to rule that they were arbitrary and capricious in not resolving the case in Mr. Simon's favor on the basis of information it was not that was not argued to it would be improper.
Understood. Well, I guess what I'm the most conflicted by is the situation that the 2.69 number was utilized when obviously the author of it puts in a very, very specific caveat that this is supposed to be utilized for this one area and not across the board. The city goes out for whatever reason and decides to use, if this is correct, 2.1. I think citizens have a right to know what the rules are, how they're going to be applied, and under what conditions. Understanding, in all due respect, that things can change depending on water bodies and things like that, but there has to be a clear explanation as to why it's going to be 2.3, 2.6, 2.5, 2.1 in this case. So that's what's, I guess, troubling me more than anything else as far as, you know, an equal application of a standard. Because, I mean, let's face it, 2.69 is what's being articulated by the city in this specific location, but 2.1 is what's being utilized other places. I don't like citizens to have to make a moving hit a moving target. However, having said that, the statute is very narrow as to what we can overturn the Wetlands Board, and it's intended to be that way because it's not the responsibility of this commission to determine anything other than what's in that statute. We don't get a right to look at this de novo all over again. We're putting ourselves in their position. It has to be something that gets right down to arbitrary and capricious or lack of jurisdiction, and I think that's what's before the commission today. Matters before the commission. We need to dispose of this gentleman. Mr. Tankard.
It is my opinion that we should remand this to the Wetlands Board because when we look at 28.2-13, that substantial rights of the appellant have been prejudiced because of the findings, conclusions, or decisions of the board are, and I think in this case, unsupported by the evidence on record, considered as a whole, and F, arbitrary and capricious or an abuse of discretion. I think both those two apply in this case. So that's my move. I move to remand because of those two points in 28.2-13.
I'll second.
Second by Mr. Plumlee. Further discussion. when you're remanding, do you want to give any instruction, direction, or what the, Mr. Plumlee, what you think should be considered, or Mr. Tankard?
I think it needs to be remanded to consider the project that was presented to the board and to apply the commission's, I think, conclusion that there was insufficient establishment of jurisdiction at the site. I mean, I think that's what the motion is about. I don't know what the applicant wants now, because I think the applicant is basically, for all practical matters, withdrew
the application.
At
and that's point. Not even relevant, actually.
So it's really, is there jurisdiction at the site? They need to do a better job of establishing that on the record, I think, in accordance with this motion.
Motion made and second. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
Is that one no? Mr. Robbins votes no. Thank you all very much.